Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. Welcome back to the podcast, Colin. How's things?
Great, thank you very much indeed. Caught myself a bit of a cold over the last few days, so if I sound a bit throaty, I am.
Travelling for you, no doubt.
Well, I guess if you get on an aeroplane nowadays, the doc said to me, you can almost count 3 days later, you're going to take a visit to the doctor. You know, it's you don't get on an empty plane nowadays, gents. It's every plane you get on is full. And I think when the conditioning, you know, was designed, nobody anticipated. I mean, if we go back 10, 15 years, 20 years, pre-COVID and pre-other events, it was unusual for a plane to be absolutely full. It's now unusual for a plane to have a spare seat. So I guess the ventilation capacity is totally tested when the planes were designed.
Yeah, and it always amazes me, they say that the air conditioning systems on an aeroplane are actually cleaner than breathing normal, you know, air in the cities and everything, which is interesting because it works on like a bleed air system from the engine. So I'm not quite sure how that all works, but we'll take the word for it. So, Colin, tell us, how are things going, obviously, you know, in general, in life? What do you make of the current sort of copper prices? Obviously, you know, we've talked to copper in the past. It had a bit of a drop in the last sort of month or two, but it's moved back into the 10,000 on the futures. What do you think? And do you think the demand is still there for the metal?
Well, you know, Phil, you know what my thoughts are. They've been consistent for the last 6 or 7 years. And I think heads are buried in the sand. Like I say, I think I've said it on your show quite a few times, that when I really decided that copper was the thing to be in and set myself and companies to get into whatever good quality copper positions we could, particularly in Southern Africa, it was all based on future demand, like, you know, infrastructure, which was basically in need of rehabilitation, of growing economies. And of course, the electric car figured in my argument, not as much, and certainly doesn't now. And then, of course, there's these dreadful wars, which, you know, the ammunition and conventional wars that require a lot of copper too. So that's a very, very sad use of copper, which I don't want to prolong the debate there. But everything I thought was based on the demand. But the supply side is wrecked, Bill. The supply side is wrecked. And there's more interest at the moment in keeping the copper price down than letting it go up. I firmly believe that our forecast of a steady state 11,000, you know, we've talked about it a few times, a steady state 11,000 is very realistic. And of course, you're going to need that sustainable price before you get the majors to get the projects out of the cupboard and start dusting them off. Because the next generation of projects are going to be much lower grade or much smaller. And it's a difficult task to get the majors to accept that their threshold of 1.5 billion tons of contained copper, there's just not many of those projects around. So it's a difficult world, and you're not getting the recognition that something has to be done. And so, quite frankly, the supply side's certainly not going to get better, and the demand side's not going to get better. So something's got to break, which I think will basically transform a lot of the junior mining companies who are in the copper space with advanced projects. I've said that for 2 years, and people raise their eyebrows now, I think, when I say it. Good old Colin, keep saying it. You'll get to, you know, we'll get to believe it with you one day. We'll get to see it. But I firmly believe it as much, if not more now, than I did 3 years ago. All the fundamentals on demand are there, and the supply side, I think, is totally wrecked.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is interesting, like, as it is now phased out, as we saw the last coal-fired power station has been taken offline at Ratcliffe-on-Soar, and there's a massive drive now to eliminate these carbon emissions, you know, obviously driving for renewables, etc. And we're obviously going to switch a lot of our activities over from the fossil fuels to electricity. So, you know, you outgo your gas and oil fired, you know, boilers, and then we're going to go into electric heat pumps for, you know, heating conventional houses. And then obviously combustion engines in cars are going to be phased out. In come the battery-powered ones. And I think between 2020 and 2050, the share of the primary energy comes from electricity is going to forecast to rise from about 20% now to circa 50%. So all of a sudden, that copper becomes effectively the backbone of pretty much everything. You know, the average car contains about a mile of copper wire connecting, obviously, all, you know, different sensors and ECUs that help it function. But in electric cars, we need 3 or 4 times that amount of copper. And then half of that goes into the motors and winding. So there's just going to be a massive demand now as we phase out these, you know, these basically fossil fuels and drive everything into electrification.
Yeah, I mean, well said, Phil. But I think they've set themselves far too ambitious targets. And I'm glad that my forecasts aren't relying on electric cars, because electric cars are basically stalling. You know, they just can't get the generating stations. They can't decide who's going to pay for the recharge stations. And there's a lot of problems around that. But you know what the scary thing is the emergence of India. I think it's much more rapid than people realize, and it's going to be much bigger. And I think we're going to have another China for about 10 or 15 years. And if you, those who have been to India, if you look at how bombed out, how sort of basic the infrastructure is, there's got to be massive investment on electrification, on transmission, because, you know, you just see wires dangling everywhere, and there's got to be a fortune spent on infrastructure. And there's another sort of eye-level demand for copper, which is, I don't think that is necessarily being plugged in to the extent that it will impact the demand side. So, gee whiz, wherever you look, the demand side is getting stronger and stronger, and this supply side is getting weaker and weaker.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that sort of leads to our further acquisition or position gathering that we achieved and announced relative to Chalibwe in Zambia.
Yeah, absolutely. We just saw that the Extract sign an exclusive collaboration agreement with Chalibwe Mining Limited for the large-scale exploration of license 2211HQLEL in Zambia, covering 27,202 hectares. Extract will earn a 25% shareholding in Chalibwe Mining, or a 25% interest in the project, by preparing a work program and secure funding. The license, which expires in Feb 2025, includes cobalt, copper, gold and nickel. Extract will assist Chalibwe exclusively for 24 months and will begin services within 15 days. If Chalibwe accepts outside funding during this period, it must pay Extract a $500,000 break fee and issue the agreed shareholding. So it sounds like a decent collaboration, Colin. Just talk us through the rationale behind it, please.
Well, the rationale is that the Chalibwe shareholders approached us, and they've got a fiduciary duty, like it or not. You know, there's a reference to a dispute they have with a third party. They've got a fiduciary, like it or not, to get on with things, because you cannot sit on a license if you're, you know, a license holder and say we're in dispute, because the license will tick on anyway. So they've got a duty of care to the company, and fiduciary duty. They've got a duty to the license and the government and the ministry. And so they want to get on with life. They've recognized us as good partners in other parts of their life. And so they've requested that we assist them to do all the technical things necessary to progress the license, to find out its potential, to design development programs if appropriate, and to do everything that needs doing regarding that Chalibwe project. So we've taken on the job of doing it, and do it we will, because it's a great license. It's got a tremendous position. It's actually the center of a sandwich. You know, this project, there's operating mines. Some of them have been operating for years in the region. There's mines on the other side, on frontier. So at the end of the day, you've got a very sort of, shall we say, predictable potential deposit in the middle of existing current mines in the traditional copper belt. So it really is a very, very, very good position relative to Mopani, Frontier and other mines. Some of those mines were over 100 years long. You know, they were old, so they're very, very big mines too. So what we structured is a service deal, which keeps everything going as it should be going according to the license requirements, and satisfied the Chalibwe shareholders' needs to keep the property in good standing and exercise their fiduciary duties, those shareholders who are directors. So that's exactly what we've done.
So, Colin, what sort of quantum is this new license? Are we talking about a big copper mine potential, or is it just
it's a significant license in terms of dimensions, and it would be too much of a forward looking statement for me to actually put a tonnage on it, to put a predicted grade on it, because as we say, there's been some exploration which is in the archives, And you know,
Yeah,
it's
that's what I was going to ask.
far too premature to put a to actually attempt to put a figure on it.
But historically, what exploration has already been done on this license?
Well, ZCCM, of course, would have, and we procured some of it, and there's more to be procured, and it's all archived. Work has been done on the project, but the sort of attraction, if you like, is the fact that either side of the project are existing mines, and that, in actual fact, leads to the question that something very, very serious in geology should have would have, in actual fact, make that non-mineralized. So mineralized, we're very, very, it's extremely highly prospective. But I think to start to quantum, both in terms of size of project and grade, would be too futuristic and quite frankly not fair to the shareholders to actually make any predictions.
So just explain what potential copper assets have you now got in Zambia in extract?
Well, we've got those group of projects in the northwest, which you know about, close to the Congolese border. We've got the Silver King license, which has got those big breccia pipes, one pipe which has been explored and come out with those quite very rich results. And we've been mapping and working there as well. That'll be one of our future targets, very, you know, future targets to work on. And then, of course, we've got this Chalibwe. So essentially, we're pretty focused on Zambia, but we're well positioned in the northwest, and we're well positioned now on traditional copper belt, and we're in the IOCG areas with our Silver King.
Yeah. Well, we visited the Silver King project, didn't we? And it looks very, very prospective. And I think Glencore were there previously in a past life before they pulled out of Zambia. So there's definitely some interesting stuff going on there.
Breccia pipe is still open ended, Kevin, and you know, at depth. I mean, these things can do it. They can open up. They can be like a carrot and close down. But both, in whichever direction you look, it's open ended. And then there's another pipe about 800 meters away, and we've been doing work on the area between, because you know, what are you looking at, Kevin? Are you looking at individual pipes, which would require one mining method? Are you looking at pipes with some grade in between, which would in actual fact allow you to package the pipes? And there lies the interest at the moment, which we're currently working on mapping and trying to establish the prospectivity in the area between pipes, and of course establish potential new pipes, as well as a drilling program to fully explore the pipe that's been discovered and partially drilled.
Yeah, and you've also got Kikuyu as well that we you know, we looked at as well.
Well, that all joins up now, and of course on the other boundary is the mine which has just been sold. When I say just been sold, about 4 or 5 months ago, and that's being developed, the old Blackford mine there. So we're into a very, very interesting trend as well. And BHP left because it was quite small, but the licenses have been sort of joined up, and it's now a much bigger prospect than it was. And we're quite excited about the potential of Silver King.
So, Colin, tell us what the state of play is with the money coming from the Mozambique sale of the gold project.
All
receiving that money on a regular
yeah,
basis.
All payments have been paid on schedule, on time, in the right amount.
Very good. And you don't anticipate that will change?
Well, you know, I mean, why should I? I mean, there's a legal agreement in place, and the mine's in production. The gold price is strong. Previous planning involved going underground into the sulfides at some point. So that I'm sure they will do. If you know, at this sort of gold price, it's a no-brainer to go into the sulfides. So yes, we're confident that the other party will complete the deal as agreed and signed up.
Good. So from a cash flow point of view, you're going to have the money to progress these assets in Zambia?
Oh, yes, indeed. We wouldn't have taken them on otherwise, Kevin. We wouldn't have taken them on. We're balancing the budget to keep in cash and to advance the projects, as they need advancing. You know, these are not lightweight projects. I mean, the Northwest there, you're actually into concept land. The Western Foreland, there's been three discovery of three mines now by the Ivanhoe Group, and every mine there's been a subtle difference in the way the mineralization presents itself. So if anybody's under the illusion that the Western Foreland, the thrust and fold belt, are very uniform in the way they present the mineralization, There are some underlying commonalities, but each one is unique in its own right. So nobody's written the book, and we're busy doing our exploration, and we'll be reporting to the market when appropriate. But these are real projects which require real money, and quite frankly, the discovery potential is good, and of course they're extremely well positioned in terms of global exploration projects, which are sought after by majors. Silver King won't be a great cash burner, and is well understood, and the geology is is a lot less speculative than the Northwest, and of course Chalibwe is a conventional copper belt and well understood.
Okay, so I want to just move to Australia now, Colin. Obviously, we saw the news regarding the investigating the pre-concentration methods for the copper-gold mineralisation at the Racecourse deposit on the Bushranger project. I believe the study tested pre-screening gravity separation and then coarse particle flotation using this NovaCell technology, which showed promising results. 78% of the copper recovered into just 5% of the mass, which upgraded the copper grade from 0.19% to 2.8%. So just talk us through what this upgrading of the copper grade means potentially for the project going forward.
Yeah, well, our project was essentially, as we got 1.3 million tons of contained copper, and it's completely open-ended whichever way you look, notwithstanding the contribution ASCAP can make us, because the ASCAP section, of course, that too is open-ended. But the project, if you like, suffered from a commonality of grade of about 0.24, 0.25, that order. Very consistent with long runs. And if one compares it to Jose Maria in Argentina, not dissimilar grades. And there's a company in the Lachlan Fold nearby, not so very far away, with raising significant money to keep drilling with similar grades. So in actual fact, I know there's huge disappointment, Kevin, Phil, I know there's huge disappointment on Bushranger, but in actual fact, one shouldn't be, because I think it's going to be in the next generation of copper mines. Talked about the demand, and of course, that demand will basically lower specs. So there's dynamics going there which work for the Bushranger project. But to answer your question specifically, Phil, it's not the aspect of the processing industry which is receiving more attention and more money is upgrading for this very reason. That marginal projects have to be brought into production, and then small scale projects which are remote from either plants or power also have to have small upgrading plants to bring them into play. So upgrading is a major part of our industry and processing industry, and the research being spent on it is huge at both ends, at the top end and at the bottom end, small projects, big projects. And so when you look at the results that you just articulated, it's very good. What it means is you can take this low-grade material and the footprint of the final flotation circuits and the concentrators and all of the big material, if you like, is in actual fact, a lot of costs are limited. The footprint, the capital footprint goes down. When you get to the operating cost, that impacts upon the power. And so to upgrade and remove the waste prior to getting into the serious processing plant, to put it in layman's term, is a sensible thing to do. And so what we did, and we didn't spend more than $60,000-$70,000 doing it, was to look at all the alternatives that were available to upgrade. And of course, the one which came out best of all was the NovaCell kinetic test work. And you just said what the results are, and they're extremely encouraging. As the project is now, the forecast, the spreadsheets, the financial spreadsheets are suggesting that we want 10,000 to break even, sustained copper price. But at 11,000, it's got an NPV of around about, I think it's I'm talking off the top of my head, but in 370 million US dollars. If we start lowering that break-even price to 9,000, of course, the NPV will go up and the project will suddenly be a different project in entirety. So we're going to do more test work, more detailed test work. And if that's continues to encourage us, that will be put into the spreadsheet, and we'll have a new financial model, a new technical model, and which might or might not encourage the market. The driver for this, will be the industry's perception of sustainable copper price. And we all know that it's not going to stay at 9.5. When is it going to break out and go up to the sort of figures I'm talking? When will the industry get the confidence to actually invest in the perception of a continuing copper price that is around about 11,000? That remains to be seen. But I think the Bushranger he's very far from dead.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to take from that, this coarse particle flotation I'm using NovaCell, is that it also outperformed your conventional flotation by recovering 30% more copper. You know, and on a project where you're talking 1.3 million tons, you know, that could be a significant upgrade in terms of, you know, the amount of copper that you can actually recover.
Yeah, well, that's right. It impacts everything. But the biggest thing is your footprint, because then it's the CapEx and OpEx, you know, it really impacts upon them significantly. So they're good recovery figures. And of course, the laboratory at this stage, they have to be upstaged a bit. We intend to do more work. But again, gents, we're not talking about doing 500,000 or 600,000. We're again talking whatever we do will be less than $100,000. And if it's more than $100,000, we'll make sure that the market knows. So it's all low cost test work, which might add immense value to the project, and that's the intent. So yeah. Bushranger is very much alive. We've got the licenses and everything. The Bushranger is very much alive, and I think we're doing the necessary work. We're doing good work to, in actual fact, to make it more viable and more attractive to be one of the next generation huge porphyries in the right, in a good location, i.e. Australia.
Yeah. Colin, you always sort of said that your companies and extract specifically now is like a call option to the price of copper. I would argue actually now that you are probably more like a geared call option to the price of copper, on the basis that if and when Bushranger actually comes into the equation, it's going to be remarkable the value that could add to the extract story.
That's correct, Kevin. I mean, I think if you look at our market cap and everything, the disappointment that Bushranger bought when it wasn't sold as people expected it to be, I think the immense disappointment downgraded the share price and thus the market capitalization. So it's literally in there for zero at the moment, when other people are looking at it, you know, from afar and seeing that there's 1.3 million tons contain copper. There's not a lot of projects around the world with that sort of level. Completely open-ended. Who's had a first pass level of test work, which gave it a reasonable shot in the market, i.e. 10,000 tons break even and at 11,000, 350-370 million net present value. But a project which could transform, should this test work be successful, and should the majors suddenly decide they have to have whatever available copper in suitable jurisdictions is around. And let's face it, you couldn't be in a better jurisdiction than Australia. You couldn't be in a better position.
Yeah, so, I know you can't answer it, but I wonder what it's worth at 12,000, 13,000, 14,000, 15,000 copper.
Yeah, that's right. Well, of course,
I wonder what it's worth.
The relationship isn't linear, because you bring, you know, each increment brings in other considerations. So it's not a linear relationship, but I think if the trade become convinced that anything plus 11 is sustainable, projects like Bushranger will be re-looked at, I'm sure, by the industry. But at the moment, there's not that confidence. As I say, there's, you know, there's more interest in, at the moment, in keeping the copper price down than letting it go, Kevin. I mean, you see constant announcements from China of what a difficult place they're in. And in contrary, then you see they're all over the planet trying to get copper resources.
No, they're dragging every piece of copper out of Zambia they can get.
I mean, what did Shakespeare say? Me think the lady protesteth too much.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I go back to India. It's just emerging. And boy, is it going to emerge with growth. So, as I say, there's more interest in keeping this copper down at the moment, why corporations, countries position themselves, than there is in letting it go. Because if it does go, good Lord, where are we going to be? Because, as I say, the supply side is totally, totally threatened.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter whether there is an EV car or a normal car. I was looking at the statistics for a lot of the African countries about, you know, how many cars they have per 1,000 people And, you know, there are still literally 150 countries with less than 50 cars per 1,000 people, okay? Yeah. So this is literally billions of cars that effectively are not on the road now, that if these people become middle class, inverted commas, they will want a car, whether it's an EV car or whether it's a normal car, whether they want a fridge, whether they want a washing machine, whether they want a microwave, where they're going to need copper.
Music to my ears. I'm glad you kept going after the car, because everybody says you know, there's this sort of in market perception now, oh, you know, EVs are stalled, copper's buggered. That's not the case, because there are so many mundane, ordinary uses for copper, and just the pure available disposable income around emerging countries will in actual fact compound that copper, the requirement for copper. And as I say, to me, India is going to be the big pusher. And sadly, these wars, you know, they need a lot of copper as well. But that's a dreadful, dreadful use of copper, which I don't even want to talk about. And I'm sure you don't either.
No. So, I mean, how much copper is going to be required to rebuild Gaza, to rebuild Ukraine, to, you know,
well,
all
that's
of these
right.
things.
That's the consequences of the armament, which has been destroyed. That's the consequences, yep. The rebuild. But the actual armament itself doesn't, you know, uses an awful lot of copper. So, I mean, yep. It's just, that's a sad use. And it's, as I say, it's one we don't want to dwell on. But the fundamentals are there. The industry hasn't reacted to it. It's more interested in keeping the prices down. The BHP acquisition of intended acquisition of Anglo wouldn't produce any more copper. It has just taken it out of the right pocket to the left pocket. It's got, the situation has got to break, Kevin. And we're doing our best at Extract. We're doing our best. We're doing our best to position ourselves in a large copper country in the right projects. And I think we're doing our shareholders everything they would expect us to do. Position them, position them, position them.
No, I can see you're going to be a geared play on the price of copper.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of that too.
Okay, I think on that note, we've put the world to rights with a nice sort of half an hour chat about geopolitical issues around the world and copper prices, and obviously a great update on Zambia and obviously Bushranger. So just want to say, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Phil. Thank you very much, Kevin. Always nice to talk to you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.